Welcome, everyone, to episode 281 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to talk about Carmelo Anthony's controversial Player of the Week award. We're also going to hit on the Lakers, Jazz, and Spurs. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian, but I mean, it's not going as well as next summer might go for Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, you just informed me that Bobby Marks reported Fred VanVleet might command somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 to $30 million in free agency per year.
Per season, yeah.
Per season, yeah. Yeah. Which, Godspeed to the Knicks when they hand out that contract.
That's a Jabari.
That's definitely. I just hope it's a short-term deal, because I love Fred VanVleet, don't get me wrong, but we're just going to, we need to brace ourselves for the sticker shock that's going to continue happening as the salary cap goes up more and more. Like, I thought, yeah. Tobias Harris broke my brain already, but Fred VanVleet getting $30 million a year will further just completely ruin my brain.
Can you imagine NFL players' reaction to that contract on Twitter?
Well, Nick Foles is going to be the case of, he's going to be the one guy that NFL players are like, well, at least we got this guy $50 million to sit on the bench for the next 4 years. Get that money, BDN. You earned it. All right, boy. Let's get into, we're not going to spend too much time on this, but it was the topic du jour on NBA Twitter yesterday, because the NBA announced its Players of the Week, and Carmelo Anthony was named Player of the Week in the Western Conference. He averaged over a three-game stretch. He averaged 22.3 points on 57.4% shooting, 45.5% from deep, 7.7 rebounds, 2.7 assists. I believe all three games were wins for the Portland Trail Blazers. There was a lot of controversy, of course, because clearly there were other candidates who arguably could have been snubbed. What do you think of Carmelo getting this award, Mort?
So two of those games were against the Bulls, who have no small forward to speak of right now, like mm-hmm. at all. Both Otto Porter and Chandler Hutchinson are, you know, injured, not playing. Like, they started Shaquille Harrison in one of the games, I believe.
Ew. Okay.
So that door was just wide open. But outside of that, are you telling me that James Harden should not have earned Player of the Week?
I, like, think
you, yeah. And you brought this up to me right before we started recording. So Melo scored 67 points over the course of the entire week. Harden right. had 60 points in 31 minutes.
Yeah.
In three single quarters. Games against Atlanta. So,
yeah.
This is a legacy kind of thing. This was the NBA's way of saying, I guess, I'm sorry,
right.
Carmelo. Right. For not picking you up earlier or something. I have no idea. This came out of nowhere. But look, ultimately, if this gets his juices flowing and if this gets Portland some traction, I'm all for it. That's yeah. fine. You go ahead and enjoy that. It's all good. Like, James Harden is not going to sit there going, I should have won Player of the Week. I think he's looking at something else. I think the Player of the Week is like the most inconsequential award, yes. or whatever. Like, there, I don't even think there is a physical award at all.
I can't imagine. Yeah, maybe like a paper certificate or like a yeah. $25 gift card to Applebee's.
Yeah. Like a small plaque.
Right, yeah. right, right. Yeah, it's not like when we're considering Hall of Fame resumes, we're not going to be like, oh, this guy won Player of the Week 37 times, but this yeah. guy only won it 34. Yes, I think inconsequential is the best way to describe. That's why, like, it's, I mean, this is dumb, right? Like, as you said, mm-hmm. James Harden, he averaged 47 points over two games. Luka Doncic could win this award every week. Last week, he had 30.3 points, 9 assists, 8.7 rebounds. Yep. Anthony Davis had 28 points, 11 rebounds, 2 blocks in 4 games. Like, there were a bunch of other deserving candidates. Anthony was only 16th in the Western Conference in scoring last week. But maybe this is just the NBA's way of being like, oh, you're not washed? Okay, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Like, that's great. And you know what? I mean, Carmelo caught a ton of heat that first game he came back against the Blazers. Or, sorry, for the Blazers, against the Pelicans.
Well, he played so bad, it might as well have been against the Blazers.
Right. I mean, he was a minus 20 in 24 minutes. He had 10 points on 4 of 14 shooting. But, you know, he hasn't been as bad in recent games. I would dare say. I mean, he's had a plus minus in double digits in each of the last three games he played. Like, we said it when he signed with the Blazers. Their front court is just so injury ravaged at this point that the bar was not super high for him to clear to be better than Anthony Tolliver's corpse and Mario Hezonja, who's just, it's not going to happen for him.
Right.
RIP to those dreams. So he's doing it, and that's great. And, like, he's helping the Blazers come back from a very tough start to the schedule. It's dumb. He shouldn't have won it, but I don't care. Like, I'm not going to get bent out of shape. I don't think, as you said, I don't think James Harden is, like, sitting at home right now bemoaning his lack of a Player of the Week award. But maybe
James Harden's beard right now is soaked from tears.
Right. I mean, considering how much James Harden complains about awards, maybe he might be the one case who is actually miffed about this. Luka is not sitting at home pissed off that he did not win Player of the Week last
week. I don't think Luka knows how to be pissed off. That dude is just happy all the time.
Yeah. Did you see his bird of JJ Barea, by the way?
No.
He posted on Instagram. I think it was like it was him walking into a game with JJ Barea. He's like, walking into the game with my little brother.
Oh man, I did see that Dallas had, you know, had a sit down. Like they put Luka, Maxi Kleber, and Boban together in like an international trio, just sitting there taking questions and shooting the breeze together, which was outstanding. More of that, Dallas, please.
Yeah,
that was Boban, so good.
Boban just taking all the questions always. That should be his role on the team. You don't actually have to play basketball. Just sit there and field media questions because you're the absolute best.
Well, you know, I learned something interesting about Boban in that segment. He actually wants to be a GM.
Really?
Yeah. He's, and then dear to my heart, because I'm Danish, he said he wants to, you know, build a team like Legos. Like, he wants to see how all the pieces fit together and like just make it come together. So look out for Boban, Elton Brand.
GF Boban. I'll take Boban over Elton Brand at this point.
A 7'4" general manager.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, I'm all in for it. That'd like negotiation. That's a negotiation tactic in and of itself. When you sit down, like, and you have Boban looking, I am offering you 3 years, $27 million. Well, I got paid $27 million just last year. Look into my eyes. I fought John Wick.
Right.
Okay, sure. Yep. I'll sign.
If you can successfully dunk on me, you get an extra $5 million. But if I block your shot, you're down to the MLE.
This needs to happen now. Like, this needs to be spoken into reality. This has to happen at this point.
I have no doubt that at some point he's going to... That's perfect. Let's love it. Absolutely love it. All right. That's all the time we're going to spend on Carmelo Anthony winning this award, because who
cares? We actually spent longer discussing Boban than Carmelo.
Which is appropriate. People on Twitter, I don't know why you wasted so much time yesterday getting pissed off about this. It's dumb, but that's Twitter. You're getting pissed off about stupid things. Let's hit the Lakers quickly, Mort, because we were looking over... They've got the Nuggets tonight, Jazz tomorrow, Portland Friday. They are 17-3. They are atop the Western Conference right now.
Right.
But if you look at their schedule and who they've beaten so far, well, I guess first of all, who they've lost to. They lost to the Clippers, they lost to Toronto, they lost to Dallas.
Right.
They've beaten Dallas on the road in overtime, that game where LeBron and Luka had the one-on-one duel, basically.
Yeah.
They beat the Jazz in the second game of the season. Other than that, they haven't beaten a single playoff team.
It's actually not that great. I mean, I understand that you know, Lakers fandom is coming back. Lakers fans, you know, all over the internet have been very, very excited. And look, I'm not downplaying that they should be. I mean, 17-3, that is a legitimate result. Like, they are a good team. I'm not disputing that. They are beating the teams that they are supposed to beat.
Yep.
And that in and of itself is a good thing. But when this schedule begins to toughen up, as it will against Denver and at Utah, maybe even at Portland, really, and then you go down the list later on against Milwaukee, again against the Clippers and Nuggets, I wouldn't be too shocked to see the Lakers take a small step back. The way that they're playing right now, it's not necessarily built to consistently be able to compete with great teams. I mean, there's a reason they struggled against Dallas. They just had no answer for Luka. They have two great players, and then there's a major, major drop-off. And sorry, Lakers fans, I mean, I know that you like Kyle Kuzma, and he's a good player, don't get me wrong, but he is not in that same tier as Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and nor is he in the same tier as Pascal Siakam, which I've seen a couple of theories about that, and no. Let's stub it while you're ahead. Like, no, Kyle Kuzma is not as good as Spicy P, not even remotely.
No.
So that drop-off in quality from the first two to the rest of the roster, that is something that could haunt them during the regular season where depth is kind of needed during, like, the sluggish times. Like, every team goes through periods where they're just, oh, my God, we're in game 65. I have nothing left, where you need to rely on your bench. And, like, credit to Rajon Rondo, who's been shooting threes well, but, like, where are they going to get that production from?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a very fair concern to bring up, especially given how much, you know, I'm not going to say that the Lakers are frauds by any means. Like, they're a good team. You don't...
No.
You don't get to 17-3, even if you have two superstars like LeBron and Anthony Davis. You know, they're...
Exactly.
They're good, but... Yeah. We're just pointing out, like, you know, this schedule does get tougher over the next month. I mean, if anything, this is going to be very instructive to kind of give us a better sense of, yeah, all right, they beat up, you know, New Orleans without Zion, and they beat the Wizards and OKC twice and Atlanta and Sacramento, the Warriors. Right. Great. But, you know, they beat Miami. That, you know, that's something. But, like, beating Chicago and Charlotte, it's just not... That's not telling me how good you are. It's telling me you're a playoff team, because that's what playoff teams need to do. You need to beat up the bad teams. So when you're going against good teams, like when you have this upcoming month where you're facing a lot of teams that are either currently in playoff position or could move up into that, you know, Portland I don't think is as bad as their record has indicated, or maybe Carmelo just turned their season around. Same goes for Orlando. I know their offense has been brutal this season, and Vucevic is probably going to be out. So that's a game the Lakers really need to win, because, you know, with Miami, Indiana, Milwaukee, all road games coming up, you need to steal wins where you can in this upcoming stretch. So
No, I think we prefaced this beautifully. Yeah, honestly, I polish our own crowns here, but I. You know, it's not saying that they're a bad team.
Right.
It's just a matter of maybe they're not this good, like record-wise, in 20 games.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Avery Bradley is out, it looks like, for at least four more games. So that doesn't help. I'm like, genuinely intrigued to see what happens, especially Utah will hit in a little bit. But, you know, Denver tonight and then Utah, the second game of a back-to-back on the road, that's going to present a challenge. I think we're going to learn a lot about this Lakers team in the next month, and we'll find out, you know, just how far they have to go. But I'm definitely not crowning the Lakers the favorites right now. Like, I still, until I see otherwise, the Clippers are going to be my favorites for the rest of the year.
Yeah. I will say this, though. So Anthony Davis has struggled a little bit with his jumper this year. That is bound to bounce back as well. So that's a sort of addition that they're going to get later on as well. So to be fair, I mean, he's shooting, what, like 48% from the field or something like that. But I know from mid-range, like where he's usually pretty money, he's been rather dreadful. So when that bounces back, that's going to give them a boost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like he's shooting 28.8% from
between 10 and 16 feet,
and then 27.7 from 16 feet to the 3-point line.
Both are significantly below what he usually shoots. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, last year he was 40.8 between 10 and 16, 34.1 between 16 feet and the 3-point line. Career, he's 42.6 between 10 and 16, 38.1 from 16 to 3-point line. So, yes, if that does bounce back, as you would expect it to, because he's never shot this poorly, his worst from 10 to 16 was 37.3% as a rookie. He's been above 40% in each of the last six seasons. So, yeah. If and when that bounces back, look out. Like, the Lakers during the regular season, just having LeBron and Anthony Davis, if they stay healthy, that might be enough to push them to 50-plus wins.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. No, I mean, look, it would be disappointing otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. And to their credit, I mean, I have the same concerns with you, especially as we get into the playoffs. Where do you get that consistent third scorer? It's the same issue I have with the Mavericks. Like, and then Luka just turned into a 30-point walking triple-double. Whereas, you know, the Clippers, you know, okay, it's Kawhi and Paul George, but you also have Lou Williams is going to give you 20 points off the bench. Montrezl Harrell isn't far behind. You still have guys like Patrick Beverley, Landry Shamet, Mo Harkless, who can get hot at any given time. Yeah, right. I mean, the Lakers have Danny Green, KCP, but, you know, They're a little more, both of those guys are a little more streaky than the Clippers supporting cast. And then
Alex Caruso, I guess.
Yeah. Lakers Twitter legend, Alex Caruso. Like,
well, he's fun to watch. And he plays with energy, which matters in the playoffs. But is he like a third or fourth scorer? No, probably not. No. And I think at the trade deadline, I think they need to do some kind of move.
Mm.
Because unless Kyle Kuzma really starts coming on, I just don't see how you get by with just those two guys and then that kind of gap. And that's not going against the grain of what we've said about having two stars on the team instead of three or four. Mm-hmm. It's just that you still need to complement those stars with talent that can contribute in different areas.
Yeah.
And so far, like, Avery Bradley is shooting like under 29% from downtown. Kyle Kuzma, like, granted, he's been injured. He's coming back from all that. He's not been shooting great. Caruso has not been shooting great. Like, when Rajon Rondo is your leading three-point shooter, I think you're kind of in trouble a little bit in terms of the spacing, at least. And when you look at the numbers, they're 24th in three-point field goal attempts and 22nd in makes per game.
Mm-hmm.
In the playoffs, that's definitely going to be an issue.
Yeah. And, like, again, to their credit, you know, they're, I think, 6th in offense, 5th in defense. They are one of three teams with top 6 marks in both categories. They are joining Milwaukee and Toronto on that front. So, you know, again, this all might be much ado about nothing, but we wanted to at least, like, bring it up because, you know, we're curious. I mean, this should be one of the more fun storylines to monitor over the next couple weeks, and it's not just, like, oh, Lakers focus all the time, as always. But, like, well, we're actually going to, you know, we think the Lakers right now are on top of the Western Conference. We think they are going to be in the mix for a deep playoff run, potentially, or even home court in the West, potentially. But we still, you know, through 20 games, we still haven't gotten a great feel of just how good they are because they just haven't had many tests of that.
Correct.
They haven't gone against many playoff caliber teams. So over the next
month... And those they have gone against, they've lost against for the most part.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So over the next month, we're going to get a much better sense. I mean, 8 of their next 9 games are on the road. And it's not like a Clippers game, which is, you know, a Clippers road game, which is, all right, you're still staying in LA. This is like, they are actually on the road. They're going, you know, to the Southeast in mid-December and then to the Midwest. I'm interested to see how they fare over the next couple weeks.
I still think that's a major competitive advantage, you know, for both LA squads.
Yeah.
Not having to travel compared to the rest of the league. It's been bothering me for years.
I mean, it's only 2 games, right?
Well, even so, like, a lot of teams have to travel, you know, significant distances to get somewhere. And then they have to check into a hotel. They have to go through all the hoopla. Yeah. Whereas these guys, they can stay home in their houses or apartments or whatever. Like, that's a huge asset.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, I'm not going to say it's going to like swing the playoff race or home court advantage or anything, but yeah, for sure. It's definitely an advantage that other teams really outside of, I guess, the Knicks and the Nets.
Well, it could swing a playoff series because let's assume that the Lakers and Clippers meet up like early in the playoffs. I know that's right now seems very implausible, but let's just imagine that they do. And it's a 7-game series or whatever. Both teams' players are able to stay home during the whole stretch of that series, meaning no road games in that sense whatsoever. And then when they get into the second round or the third round where other teams have traveled, like, you're fresher.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. LeBron, well, that's a topic for a different day when we fix the NBA.
LeBron could be in his little cryo chamber the whole time.
In stasis, like in the Aliens. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
Freeze me up.
All right, well, let's get into the Utah Jazz because we both really liked them coming into the year. We thought adding Mike Conley and Bojan Bogdanović made them a dark horse title contender. Right now, they are sixth in the Western Conference at 12-9. They are coming off of a 5-game road trip in which their only win was against Memphis. They lost to Milwaukee, Indiana, Toronto, and Philly. Toronto, they were down by 40 points at halftime before coming back and cutting it to a 20-point loss. And Philly was not as bad, but I think they got down by like 25, 26 at one point before coming back in the fourth quarter when Philly took its foot off the gas. So, you know, those, unlike the Lakers, who haven't really played anyone, like those teams are all very good. They're all top six teams in the East. There's no shame necessarily in losing to any of them, especially on the road. But I think it did expose some concerns about the Jazz moving forward, especially, you know, we just mentioned they're playing the Lakers tomorrow night at home. What has caught your eye about the Jazz so far this season?
I actually think outside of Mike Conley struggling mightily, it's not been necessarily easy to identify. It seems like they are a cohesive unit in that sense. It doesn't seem like they are playing out of rhythm. It's just they're just not winning. They're not closing games. They're not closing quarters very well. And when I looked into the numbers, I was surprised to see that they force very few turnovers. Like, their opponents only average 13.7 turnovers against them. Like, this is one of the great defensive teams of this era. They should be forcing a ton of turnovers to get on run. And I think that's in direct correlation with the fact that they're 28th in the league in field goals attempted. Like, they only take 83.6 shots a game. You know, when you force turnovers, you get more possessions and you get more shots, presumably. I think it's a question of their defense needing to be picked up on the perimeter. Because, like, Gobert is still Gobert. He's still a threat inside. Like, last year, this was the same hoopla, right? Like, you brought up Gobert, I think, almost a year ago, you know, saying, hey, look, in the early parts of the season, he's not been that great of a defender.
Yeah.
And then he turned it around, and he won DPOY, right?
Yes.
See, that's the thing about the award show. I don't remember awards anymore. I'm pretty sure
he did.
See, you're a company man, but just by you saying, I think he did, that means you think that show sucks as well. I know you can't comment on that. I'm just saying it.
He did win DPOY. Yeah, he's 2 years reigning DPOY.
Right. So he bounced back big time.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Maybe this is just an adjustment period because, you know, as we saw during the summer, they upgraded, you know, their offense a lot. Like, Bojan Bogdanović has been tremendous. Averaging almost 21 points a game. Like, we knew he'd be good there, but to this extent, this has surprised me. Like, he's picking up the slack for Mike Conley, who's just been so, so bad. 37% shooting from the field, 14 points a game in 30 minutes a night. It's not going all that well. Andy Bailey, friend of the podcast, brought up something interesting in our group chat that I didn't really pay attention to otherwise. I wouldn't have noticed had he not mentioned it. But he said that Quinn Snyder was bringing in, like, all defensive lineups that just couldn't score the ball, and that was kind of frustrating because then you were stuck playing on one end. that's a problem. Like, you need to have balance, and it's strange to me that Snyder would do that, considering how much offensive talent is now on the roster compared to last year. Like,
right,
you can stagger a lot of these guys. It would make sense. So maybe this is just Snyder trying to figure out his rotations and figure out what's working and what's not. Mm-hmm. Like, they're still a playoff team, but
they
can't mess around. Not in the West. Like, now is the time to win. And you brought something up about Donovan Mitchell right before we started recording, which I found interesting. Apparently, he's just taking way more mid-range shots this year.
Yeah, I mean, in that Sixers game last night in particular, like, that's what the Sixers try to do, is they hound the three-point line, try to force you inside. If you're either going to challenge Joel Embiid, what's going to end poorly, or you're going to take mid-range jumpers. So,
right,
you know, early in the game, the Jazz were doing that, and they were hitting their shots, and then they stopped hitting their shots. And, yeah, I mean, Mitchell right now, he is averaging a career-high number of shot attempts from 10 to 16 and from 16 feet to the three-point line. He's at 14.7% from the former, 14.4% from the latter. More concerning is his rate of three-pointers has dropped. He was at 40.4% as a rookie, 33.9% last year, down to 30.2% this year.
And only 17.7% of his shots are within 3 feet of the basket, also a career low.
Yeah. So he's taking more shots from inefficient parts of the floor. And, like, if you just look at his per-game line, you wouldn't necessarily notice anything's wrong, right? He's averaging 24.5 points, almost 5 rebounds, 4 assists, more than 2 threes a game, shooting a career-best 36.9%. from three-point range. So,
getting to the line.
He's got the credentials, or the per-game stats, of a potential all-star. His PER is at a career high, 19.8. More win shares per 48 minutes than ever. Like, it looks good on the surface. But, yeah, I mean, I think his shot profile, they're just goading him into the type of shots that this whole summer was meant to prevent. Like, you bring in a Mike Conley and a Bojan Bogdanovic to reduce the burden offensively on Donovan Mitchell, so he doesn't have to create and doesn't have to take a bunch of mid-range shots, because that, you know, tends to be more inefficient than shots at the rim or shots at the three-point line. That's just math. Sorry, Scout Man. But, you know, as you mentioned, Mike Conley, I think that's a huge part of it, of course. You know, you did not bring in Mike Conley to shoot. Like, Mike Conley's basically Ricky Rubio right now. That's not why you brought in Mike Conley. Guy averaged.
That's harsh, but it's fair. Yeah.
In terms of offense, I think, you know, like.
No, you're right. You're right.
And that's not what you were expecting, and bringing in Mike Conley. And do I think he's going to be this bad the whole season? No, I don't. I think when you play in one system for 11 years or 11, 12 years, however long
12
he was.
Years.
12 years, yeah. When you play in one system for that long, now you have to get used to a whole new set of teammates, a whole new offensive system. It's going to take time. And the beautiful thing about the NBA is that it is an 82-game season. He's got months and months, and, you know, he's still 4-plus months away from the playoffs. So he's got plenty of time to adjust. Like, thankfully, he will potentially be fine by the time the playoffs roll around. But for now, he's a liability to some extent. You know, he has these games. He shows flashes where it's like the Conley of old. And then he just goes back, especially lately. He's been, you know, single-digit points in 4 of his last 5 games.
Yeah.
That's not good.
You know who else hasn't been playing as well? And I think in part that's because he got benched.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Ingles.
Yep.
Like, he's shooting 36% from the field, and he's shooting just 31% from downtown. He's usually, like, a 40-plus percent knockdown shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, when you take him out of the starting lineup, you lose the secondary creator and playmaker. I mean, he was averaging almost 6 assists last year in this setup thing. And he's a good defender as well. Like, you wouldn't think that when you look at him, and you look at his profile and his age and all that, but he is. I think moving him to the bench is a problem. I understand needing, you know, room for Bojan,
mm-hmm.
but why not just go with Conley, Mitchell, Ingles and then Beauchamp at the four and Gobert at the five instead. I get that Royce O'Neal has been good, especially defensively.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Ingles is just better, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to ask is, like, do the Jazz need to make any major changes either schematically or to their lineups, or do they just need to ride this out, hope Conley turns it around, hope Ingles turns it around? But I'm with you. I mean, I would at least try a starting five with Ingles to see if that gets him going. Because,
yeah,
you know, I understand wanting to bring him off the bench, anchor that second unit. You're going to have a creator there, because otherwise, you know, you mentioned defense-only lineups. If you go to a full bench lineup with, you know, with Ingles in the starting lineup, you're going, like, Royce O'Neal, Jeff Green, Emmanuel Mudiay, Ed Davis, Dante Exum. Like, there's no one who you would rely on to create a shot, but there's nothing to say that you don't, or there's nothing forcing Quinn Snyder to go to a full bench unit at any point. Stagger your starters, find clumps of guys that work together, like Ingles and Rudy Gobert have great chemistry. Great.
Yeah.
Package them together so when Gobert comes out, Ingles comes out. But, like, make sure you always have one of Mitchell, Bogdanovich, Conley, Ingles, possibly even two of them, on the court at all times, and that mitigates some of the concern about, okay, well, we're starting an all-bench unit that can't score at all.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. Something else that I noticed just looking here at the numbers, which admittedly is not something I've noticed in games, and this is why it's good to look at numbers instead of just solely relying on eye test. Like, sometimes there are things that you just won't notice. They'll show up in, like, a stat sheet, and you'll go, oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The Jazz are one of the best defensive rebounding teams in the league, ranked third. Offensive rebound, however, they're ranked 29th.
Mm.
So on a rebounding perspective, like, they're just not getting additional possessions out of offensive rebounding. I know that offensive rebounding in the NBA is less prioritized these days, but right. If you're a team that ranks 28th in the league in field goal attempts per game, you need to find a way to maximize and optimize possessions. That's mm-hmm. just basic logic. And if they're not forcing steals or forcing turnovers or grabbing steals, like, they're 29th in steals as well, like, then you need to pound the offensive glass a bit. Like, you need to somehow squeeze out additional possessions, right, one way or the other.
And to be clear, that's not just a function of pace for them, because they do run, I mean, they're league average in pace, but, like,
yeah,
their offensive rebounding percentage is 28th. It's only 23.8% of the time. Defensive, they're 6th. So, yeah, overall, their rebounding is more or less fine, but that's you're right. I mean, that's an easy way to create not only second chances, but, you know, oftentimes if you're getting an offensive rebound, unless it's on a three, like, if you get one, if Rudy Gobert gets an offensive rebound, more often than not, it's going right back up. It's either going to be a foul or it's going to be a made basket.
Right. And he's doing his part. He's averaging 3.4 a game on that end.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, it's like there's no presence on the offensive glass. And that could be a coach's decision, just saying, you know what, we'd rather have a set defense.
Right.
Like, run back. But right now their defense isn't that great. So, like, what do you lose?
Yeah, I mean, right now and that's kind of the concern, is they're 11th on defensive rating and then 23rd in offensive rating. So the offense, I think you would expect it to, I would have expected it to struggle a little bit, just given the amount of change and how many new pieces, like high usage new pieces you're integrating. I just think it takes more time than people realize. And, like, again, by April, it might be a different story, but bringing in Mike Conley and a Bojan and forcing Joe Ingles to the bench, that is a huge transition for this Jazz team, even though they are adding more talent. And the same is probably true on defense. Like, it would not surprise me if the Jazz got better on defense as the year went along, as their new guys become more familiar with each other, become more familiar with what Quinn Snyder wants them to do, mm-hmm. develop chemistry, improve their communication. All of those things are a factor, but, you know, this Jazz team, as long as Rudy Gobert is there and as long as Donovan Mitchell is there, they're going to be a defensive-oriented team. And then, you know, that I think that's, they were either first or second last year and the year prior to that as well. So if the defense is not elite, then you're going to need the offense to pick up substantially.
Yeah. So where does Dante Exum get traded to at the trade deadline?
Damn it, Mort. Didn't we just have a talk about not doing this as much?
We did, but at the same time, we also have to be realistic. He's playing 7 minutes a game. He's played 8 games this year, and he's sitting at like plus $9 million a year.
Yeah.
There should be a lot of teams out there who should be interested in his defensive acumen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, before pulling the trigger on, like, I still believe in the talent on this team. Yeah. I just think it's going to take a little more time, and it really, I don't know.
Well, I'm not suggesting a rebuild.
Yeah, no, no, no.
I'm just saying, like, with his price tag and with him not playing, and they're clearly going for it right now, like, maybe he's going to be, like, a necessary sacrifice.
Yeah. I mean, I'm wondering if you move Ingles into the starting lineup, if he becomes more of the anchor of that second unit.
Hmm.
But I don't know.
Could be. No.
Yeah. I mean, there's clearly a lot for the Jazz to figure out. Luckily, their schedule softens up considerably. Yeah, after the Lakers, they get Memphis, OKC, Minnesota, Golden State, Orlando, presumably without Vooch, Atlanta, Charlotte, Miami, Portland, Clippers, Detroit, Chicago, Orlando, New Orleans, New York, Charlotte, Washington, Brooklyn. So, like, up until the middle of January, I mean, hopefully, knock on wood, by January 6th, Zion will be back, so the Pelicans might not be as much of an easy win. But, like, no, I'm looking at that schedule after the Lakers, and there are 3 or 4 games in the next month and a half that I would say are pretty obvious losses. I'd say at Miami, at Clippers, at Minnesota are probably, I don't even, at Minnesota is not even necessarily lost. At Miami,
no,
at
I was raising my eyebrow when you said that.
Yeah, yeah. At Miami, at Clippers are their 2 hardest games for the next month and a half. So, like,
yeah, I wouldn't even be surprised if they beat Miami.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean,
so
that should be in the play. But I, look, the good thing for Utah, at least, is that they're still over 500.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't completely, you know, crapped the bed and are like Detroit 7-13 or whatever. Like, they're still above 500, which goes a long way, especially in this Western Conference.
Definitely.
They needed to be competitive, and they've somehow managed to win a significant amount of games while figuring out what the hell they are.
Yeah.
When that improves, their record should improve.
Yeah,
we'll see.
They've beaten the Clippers, they've beaten Philly, beaten Milwaukee already. They've beaten good teams. So
yeah.
I understand if there is panic among Jazz fans right now. I still would not be too worried about this team. I still think they're going to be one of the best in the West by the time mid-April comes along.
I think so, too. But by the way, just after 20 games, would you have ever thought that Dallas would be a better team than Utah?
No.
Record-wise?
No. Not even remotely. Even taking in strength of schedule. No.
Luka's the MVP, man.
Let's go into a team where that might have some reason for concern. I know you've been clamoring to hit on them. I apologize in advance to our former co-host, Sarah. Sarah, just tune out now. Don't listen. the San Antonio Spurs, who got off to a 3-0 start, 4-1 start to the season, have won 3 games since. They are 7-14. They had lost 8 straight at one point, during which Greg Popovich gave the excellent "That's fake news" interview in reference to his team's struggles. Mort, what is going on with the Spurs? And is this, I know there is a cottage industry every year where it's like, is this the year that the Spurs finally go down and then they win 45 games and make the playoffs? Is this the year the Spurs finally go down and don't make the playoffs?
Yes. Yes, it is. Sorry. It is. Look, when you lose by 34 points to the Detroit Pistons. The Detroit Pistons, Brian.
Yeah.
Then you're probably in a bad place. Look, their defense is all over the place. Like, there's just that is some of the worst defense I've seen this year.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no rhyme or reason to many of their actions. You can just see Pop, like, exacerbated, like, on the sideline, just, like, looking over and shaking his head. And, like, it's just, It's bad. I mean, you and I went through some of the numbers before we started recording. Like, DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge are particularly bad with their on and off numbers. Mm-hmm. Trey Lyles, who Spurs fans have been talking up because of his rebounding. And to his credit, he's been rebounding really, really well. 6 boards a game in just 17 minutes. But his on and off numbers have been bad. Dejounte Murray, who I know, like, there were high hopes for him coming in to this year because he was healthy and all that. Like, he's still working his way back from missing mm-hmm. an entire year. So I don't think it's fair putting so much on him. What I do think is fair to put on, well, not him, but Pop. And I love Pop, but he and Deontay, that is, Dejounte Murray and Derek White have only played 8 minutes together this season. And that's an information I got from you. So thanks for that, because
yep.
wow, I wouldn't yeah. have guessed.
Yeah.
This team is just, I don't know what it is. They're just all over the place, not in a good way. Like, they don't force turnovers at all. Like, their opponents are protecting the ball best in the entire league, mm-hmm. Which is a similar problem with the Jazz, honestly.
Yeah.
The Spurs are league worst in 3-pointers made and attempted. And I know that we're going to have some Spurs fans in our mentions going, well, the 3-point shot isn't an end-all and be-all stat. Absolutely accurate. Absolutely. But in today's league, when you are short on talent, which this Spurs team is to some extent, you need to bridge the gap by shooting threes. That's basically how games are swung in this day and age. And when you only hit 9 a game and you take less than 26, you come in having to play catch up. This is basically a bringing a knife to a gunfight situation. Yeah. And they do it every single night. And I don't know what they're trying to prove. I don't know if it's an unwillingness from the coaching staff of taking more threes, because they have guys who can take more. Like, Rudy Gay could take more. LaMarcus Aldridge could take more. Mm-hmm. DeMar DeRozan could take more. I know that he said, oh, just don't shoot it. He could take more. Trey Lyles, who came into this league, like, okay, granted, he does take 2 a game in those 17 minutes, so that's decent. But he came in as a stretch 4. He should be gunning. Or perhaps, Brian, you shouldn't trade Davis Bertans for the opportunity to sign a Morai.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would be really interesting to see how this team, how much different it would be if Davis Bertans was still there, which is a wild thing to say. I would never think, like, I love Bertans, but I would not think he is the difference maker between a 45-win Spurs team and a Spurs team that is 7-14 right now.
I mean, let's take a look at Bertans, shall we?
Yeah.
How he's doing in Washington, just to really rub it in. Sorry, Sarah.
Yeah, that's why I told you to turn out.
7.6 3-pointers attempted per game in just 27.6 minutes. He's knocking down 45.6% of those. He's hit 62 triples in less than 500 minutes this year.
Yeah.
He's averaging 13.2 points. Now, do we agree that if we plug that exact player who's delivered in Washington onto the Spurs, and I know that he won't have those numbers on San Antonio necessarily,
right,
but let's assume that he did, would he be the team's second best player? Third best player? Maybe even the... Where would he be? Okay, maybe not best, then influential.
Yeah.
Influential.
I don't know that... I mean, I still would put him behind DeRozan, Aldridge, Murray, White, probably even Rudy Gay.
Oh, I'm not there with the Rudy. I get what you're saying in terms of being better, but in terms of being more influential,
but
I think he would definitely be the clear third guy.
I mean, as you said, he's not going to put up 7.6 threes in San Antonio like he did, like he is in Washington. I mean, he did average last year in San Antonio in only 21.5 minutes a game. He had 4.4 3-point attempts, shot nearly 43% on those shots. So he would be their highest volume 3-point shooter, I think, or maybe second behind Bryn Forbes. But yeah, I mean, just
but you don't need that. So trade him away so you can go after Morris.
Yeah. It really sucked. The NBA really should have allowed a take back on that. Like
they shouldn't. The Spurs should have been smarter. We always hail the Spurs as being this smart team. Why would you go out of your way to trade Bertans, a guy who I've never heard a bad word about him whatsoever. Like, why would you go trade a productive, youngish player who clearly fills a need to go out and get a Morris twin who have had legal issues and locker room issues and basically are not easy to play with? Like, come on. This was on the Spurs all the way through it. This was on the Spurs.
Marcus Morris is currently the Knicks' leading scorer.
I don't care.
And he's shooting 52.4% from three this year.
Yeah, that's fine. Look at where the Knicks are. They're 4-17.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that definitely hurts. I mean, I think it's offensively, of course, the threes, and that's not the only issue, though. I mean, the defense is 27th, tied for 27th in the league.
Yeah,
at 113.4 points allowed per 100 possessions. And look, I mean, DeMar DeRozan has never been an elite defender. I would think it's fair to argue.
Correct.
With him on the court this season, the Spurs are allowing 115 points per 100 possessions. With him off the court, only 104.2. That is the second biggest swing, I believe, of any rotation player behind only Bryn Forbes. And then LaMarcus Aldridge is not far behind that. 115.1 when he's on, 106.6 when he's off. So if they are going to turn this thing around, they need to tighten up defensively very quickly. And I thought, you know, Murray, of course, is working his way back from the torn ACL, but he's been, you know, he's still himself. He's still good at defensively. I really did think we were going to get more Murray-White minutes in tandem. I guess I understand those two are your better creators in general, so maybe you want to stagger them for that reason, but you do also have Patty Mills for that. I mean, maybe it's just you're afraid that it's going to crimp your spacing, but with all due respect, like, you're not shooting threes anyway. Your spacing is immediately crimped just because of that. Like, DeMar DeRozan has hit one more three-pointer this year than Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
That ain't good, because Ben Simmons has caught a ton of crap for not shooting threes. DeMar DeRozan is 2 of 8 from three-point range.
Does that make DeMar half the coward of Ben Simmons?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah. We need like a coward stat.
A coward scale?
Yeah.
Yeah, Basketball Reference, get on that.
Yep.
So, what do you think the Spurs need to do to turn this thing around other than play better defensively? Like, you know, we asked in Utah what they can do lineup-wise, game-wise. How do the Spurs turn this thing around?
Oh, they don't. They don't. I have a very easy answer for you.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, like, they have Houston tonight, then the Kings on Friday, Cleveland. Damn, they have like a week off, basically, between the Kings and Cleveland, so they'll at least get a couple practices in, hopefully.
Well, they're old. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully Pop can, like, teach them how to play defense in a week.
Cleveland, I guess.
Phoenix, Houston, Brooklyn, Clippers, Memphis, Dallas, Detroit, Warriors. They have a bunch of winnable games coming up, but
it's also a good week to just look at trade proposals.
Right. Like, I also would have said Washington is a winnable game, or Portland is a winnable game, or Memphis is a winnable game, and they won none of those. They lost to Atlanta, who has 4 wins on the season.
It sounds about right.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, 5 wins. I stand corrected, because they beat they pounded the Warriors. That's right. But
elite team. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not worried about the Jazz. I'm very worried about the Spurs, because I had them. This was another one of those teams where I was like, I'm just not picking against Pop until, like, the wheels are going to fall off one day. But I really thought White and Murray, I knew the interior defense would be a concern, because you are relying on Aldridge and Jakob Poeltl, and that's not totally optimal. Trey Lyles has been abysmal on defense, which is kind of his thing. But I thought White, Murray, even Lonnie Walker, who just is not getting really any burn. I mean, he's played 81 minutes.
He's not season. Getting a chance. Kelton Johnson is playing like two. He played 2 minutes total this season. He's been playing in the G League. Like the Spurs and their like disdain for playing young guys, like which is well known.
Mm-hmm.
It's grown old at this point. We're seeing players who can come in at a young age and really do some damage. I mean, I know that not anyone is Luka. I know that. Like, Luka. But
right.
There are still a lot of, you know, very, very good 20-year-olds who can play and produce. And on the Spurs, it doesn't matter. Like, you just don't get that chance. Like, how do you know if Keldon Johnson is good in, like, an NBA context if you play him 2 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
You don't. It's not enough. And I get, oh, well, in practice, yeah, fine. Look, there's limited practice time in the NBA. Well, we used the G League then. It's not the same. You don't know. Put in the young guys. This is why I make the explosion sound. They need to do something different. It's time. And it's not like this is not something where we're sitting there and laughing at the Spurs. They had a great, great period of time where they were competitive, winning championship. Like the last, 25 years, it feels like almost. Like, I don't know how long, a little bit less than that. But like David Robinson missed like practically the whole year that in 96, 97. And that was the last time they missed the playoffs. So like there's no problem with the Spurs finally bottoming out. Like it's completely fine. You can look yourself in the mirror and go, we just did something that is impossible practically.
Right.
It's fine, but now it's time. Now it's time. And you know what? Even if they turn it around after the week off and they somehow, you know, claw their way into like the eighth seed, it's like to what purpose? I know I'm not, this is not a whole championship or bust thing. But they're so old, like I don't see when it benefits them getting into like the eighth seed here. Like you need to invest in the young players if you want to move forward and you want to become better. Okay, let's say you make it to the eighth seed with these guys. Then you're going to roll them back next year when they're a year older and a year slower. Like why?
Yeah.
I don't understand their plan right now.
Yeah, I mean they're definitely caught. Look, the Kawhi thing was just caught them so off guard, I think, and they're kind of stuck between trying to stay competitive in this like win now window with DeRozan and Aldridge, and then you also have, you know, White, Murray, Walker are hopefully your backcourt of the future. So they're kind of towing the line between compete now even though we don't have championship upside and then just total rebuild. And I don't think, I mean, you know, it's Pop is toward the end of his career. Who knows when he's going to actually retire? But I can't imagine he's going to want to stay on for like a tear down to the studs type. You know, he doesn't want Sam Hinkie to come in and start the process all over again. So I understand it to that extent. And while you've got this playoff streak going, you're not going to intentionally throw away a season.
Right.
It wouldn't shock me if this playoff streak does snap that then they start to give a longer look at like, okay, what's our big plan moving forward? Like what's the next 5-year plan? But I'm glad, I mean, what you said is right. Like what the Spurs have done, I think is going to be unprecedented through the rest of the NBA. Like no team in this era is ever going to have 22 straight playoff berths again. There's just too much parity. There's a clear team building cycle where, you know, you take stuff happens. Like even if you're a great team, stuff happens after a while.
Yeah.
Your players get older or they ask out in free agency or they demand a trade, and it's just really hard to maintain that level of greatness for
or the league changes around them,
which I think I would argue that's what we're seeing now, unfortunately. It's a combination of their best player asked out plus, you know, just this wave of Maury ball, basically.
Correct.
So, yeah, like, I don't want to, like, dance on the Spurs' graves because, I mean, I think this is one of the greatest runs we've seen in NBA history, one of the greatest runs we will ever see in NBA history.
I hope I didn't come off as dancing on their graves.
No. Okay,
good. That was definitely not my intention. I have great respect for the Spurs.
Right.
It's just time.
Yeah. It sucks to talk about them in this capacity. Like, I want them to just continue winning 45 games until the end of time. I want something that you could just cling to every year. Just write it down in pen. Like, all right, Spurs are going to win 40-plus or 50-plus. Make the playoffs, great, move on, don't think about it, let's go talk, figure out the other teams. But, unfortunately, at least through the first month and a half of the season, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. Who knows? Maybe they turn it around, but it's
I'm just saying, the Spurs never missed the playoffs while Obama was president.
Or while George Bush was president, so I don't know if we want to really go down that road.
Way to ruin my point there, bro.
Yeah, sorry. But that's fair. Yeah. We could blame it on him, too. Yeah. It's weird. I genuinely do hope they turn it around, because it's the NBA is more fun when Pop is, like, relevant. And although I really do his fake news press conference. I think it was either before or after the Philly game was one of the highlights of the season so far.
Well, Pop is a national treasure. International treasure, right. Really. He's a global treasure. So there's nothing negative about this. I mean, it's just they have a bad season, and it's just a symptom of something deeper, right? It's not just, oh, this is a team that's going to bounce back next year, feel to it. This is something else. This is a team that has not embraced, like you said, the Maury Ball concept. This is a team who's not embraced how the league is functioning right now, who are struggling with the whole idea of players are basically, on a two-year rental. Like, that's never been their way of doing things. I mean, look, outside of Tony Parker, who spent, his last season with the Hornets, they've had guys for so many years who retired as Spurs players.
Right. Spurs lifers.
Spurs lifers, yeah. So I think they're still trying to pivot in this crazy world.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just there's so many moving factors in this. And I'm definitely not wanting to dance on their graves or anything. It's just I call it like it is. They are just not attuned to the way that the NBA is functioning right now. And granted, if they played significantly better defense this year, they probably would be in the playoff mix, and good on them for being that if that was the case. But I still maintain, to what point?
Right.
With this specific roster, this roster to me feels a little bit like what Boston tried to do when Kyrie was there. Like, they were trying to win now, but at the same time, they had a foot in, the kiddie pool. I don't know. I don't think that works.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think to some extent their reluctance to embrace Maury Ball and take a ton of threes, it's personnel based. Like, they just don't have, I know LaMarcus could shoot more, DeMar could shoot more.
Yeah.
But Murray did not come into the NBA as a well regarded 3-point shooter. Like, he was going to be, a defensive minded guy who hopefully over years will develop that type of shot. And I think it still could happen, but they just don't really have a ton of sharpshooters. And Marco Bellinelli, the guy who's ostensibly supposed to fill that role, is shooting 30.5% from deep and has just always been a tire fire on defense. So,
but the problem is they haven't had those sharpshooters for a while now. It hasn't been a priority for him to fix it, apparently. I mean, and that sounds bad. I mean, I'm not trying to put that on them, but when have they gone out of their own way to say, okay, we need shooting? By not trading Davis Bertans, that would have sent a signal okay, we want to keep doing this.
Yeah.
Because even if you get Marcus Morris under the best of circumstances, he's not as good a 3-point shooter as Bertans is. So we're still willing to sacrifice the long-range shooting.
Yeah. This 20 game sample size notwithstanding, because Marcus Morris has been shooting the lights out for 20 games, so maybe they saw that coming, but probably not.
I mean, I'm not putting too much stock into what someone does on the Knicks, to be honest.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So that's a depressing segment, but overall, I'll end on a positive note with the Spurs. Okay. I think, given how they pivot, when they do pivot, mm-hmm. they pivot well. I think ultimately, if they embrace something, they will find a way to make it work. So assuming they say, look, let's embrace a rebuilding process. Let's embrace getting younger, getting more three-point shooters. Let's embrace, you know, becoming more of a part of this new age NBA. I think they'll find themselves right in the mix after they complete that rebuilding process, because mm-hmm. they are so good at adapting themselves when they embrace something. I just don't think they've embraced the current setup.
Right.
Like back in the day, they were a bad three-point shooting team, like when the league was starting to experiment with it just a little bit more, mm-hmm. and they brought in shooters. I mean, Rick Carlisle was on Zach Lowe's pod recently, and they were going back and to talk about like some former playoff series with the between Dallas and San Antonio, and Carlisle used the term, well, they were a sharp shooting team. Mm. And like my brain immediately said, wait, the Spurs? Oh, that's right. Like back in the day, like there was a time where they were the forerunners of this. Like they were actually very aggressive in creating 3-point looks. Mm-hmm. And then somehow that just all went away. Like it's almost like they capped themselves to saying, oh, okay, let's not get too crazy. Like there's a limit. There's a substantial limit to what we do. And no, and not anymore. They need to unshackle themselves by the past, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just going to be them prioritizing the right types of personnel moving forward, and then also figuring out how far they think this DeRozan-Aldridge core can go. And these guys aren't getting any younger. Do they think this can eventually turn into a title team? If not, what are their goals here?
Well, I can answer that.
Yeah. I mean, especially now. Yeah, it's rough. But hey, Spurs fans, you made the playoffs for 22 straight years, so no one's going to cry that much for you.
Nope. No, that's very, very true.
Yep. Right. So on that note, Moyer, we will wrap up for today. As always, thank you for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. Are now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Take care.